On this episode of Narcissist Apocalypse, we talk with an abuse survivor named Annapurna. And Annapurna was in a relationship with a gaslighting physical abuser. It's a story of being seen, victim playing, identity erosion, and physical abuse. Welcome to Narcissist Apocalypse, everyone. I am Brandon Chadwick, and with me today we have Annapurna. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for asking. And if you want to be a guest like Annapurna is today, please do go to our website at narcissistapocalypse.com. Top of the page, there's a button that says guest form. When you click on that button, it takes you to our guest form page. There you can read all of our instructions and either send us an email at narcissistapocalypse@gmail.com or fill out our guest form and press the submit button. And please do send it in the format that we ask for. And today you're going to hear Annapurna's story, and a big content warning for this story as we do discuss physical abuse in two parts of this story, and they are graphic descriptions of physical abuse. So please be aware of that, and that is your content warning for this episode. And, just a really big thanks to Annapurna for being here, and now I'm going to get out of my way and your way. Annapurna, the floor is now yours.
Thank you. So I guess we'll start about me. I grew up in Southern Arizona. I was extremely lucky to grow up in a two-parent household. My parents were together for over 30 years. I'm technically the baby of the family, and I'm still technically an only child. I have a different mother than my two older brothers and my older sister. I grew up in a stable home. I think we only moved once, twice, moving out and moving back in. That's when our home was being built. And I didn't really miss school unless I was sick or I had a doctor's appointment or a dentist appointment. But I never really struggled in school. I was in gifted programs up until high school, and that led me to taking AP classes. And I was very artistic, honor roll, leadership, stuff like that. And I grew up watching 80s action movies. So The Terminator to this day is my favorite movie. I'm half Native American and half Mexican. So a lot of those values, they really played out in my life. Even now, up until this point, not very religious, but very spiritual. So I'm kind of that whole Mother Earth and Father Sun. My DNA is the earth and sky kind of belief. I grew up playing outside in the desert, always in the dirt, riding bike, quad, camping. We were always traveling. We were always out in nature, stuff like that. I played sports. I joined clubs. And I wasn't too rebellious, but there were times that I got into trouble. My father was strict. He was in the Navy before they had me. When I got older into my teen years, we kind of bumped heads here and there, but I guess that's pretty much because we were so much alike. My mom cooked home meals from scratch 7 days a week. So it wasn't until I was about 20 years old that I discovered instant mashed potatoes from a box. So that's how I grew up. I kind of have that activist heart, and I always fight for the underdog, fired up at social injustices, and believe that balance is necessary in everything. So I grew up in a kind of a rough part of town. I spent 4 years in high school in JROTC. That led me to joining the Army about a year and a half after I graduated high school. I'm an Army combat veteran. I was deployed in Iraq. I do have post-traumatic stress disorder, and I continue treatment, been years of treatment, years of therapy, and I've always been a little bit unique. I'm a bit of a metalhead, a dog lover, and independent. So I just have that, you know, deep down, I just, you know, I want to love everybody so much, so hard. And, you know, I'm kind of person, or like even the kind of mother that will move mountains for people. If I think I can do it, I'll find a way to do it. Years ago, when I was a lot younger, maybe at like, yeah, my early 20s, mid 20s, I used to be very angry, just at things that weren't balanced. And after my divorce from my ex-husband that this is not about, I really worked on changing my mindset and how I was reacting to things, because I, for whatever reason, and maybe that has to do with the PTSD, but that took years of work, and I did really, really well at it and changed a lot of things about my mindset and the way I handle things. And so that was a lot of work.
What was the biggest thing you had to change?
I had to look at other people's perspective and like put myself in their shoes and see how, you know, like, hey, this could be thought of this way. This is a different perspective. This is a different perspective. And if I was in their shoes, I might think like that too. So just considering other people's opinions and things along those lines.
Would you say that at that time, your PTSD, your trauma had taken over to the point where you were reacting to everything from that from the trauma perspective?
At that time, I believe it did have a lot to do with it. And that's when I was living in Las Vegas at the time. And that's when I started seeking treatment at the VA there. And that started my VA treatment that still continues to this day on a regular basis. So I think a lot of that therapy really, really helped. And it's helped calm me down significantly, like almost like a 180. So yeah, I believe therapy can help everybody. I've been a single mom since I was 18. So a good chunk of my life, I really didn't have anybody to rely on, nobody that's taking care of me or anything like that. If I want something, I focus, I get it, like find my home, like find my, I love 4Runners. So I bought my 4Runner, getting my education. My children, they're my life. I have 3 children, you know, or the kind of family that gets their dogs dressed up for Halloween, and we have birthday parties for them every year. And my home, we have structure. We eat dinner at the table every night, almost every night. No phones, we talk, we connect. And I've been in about 3 abusive relationships. Those were mostly physical. They were short-lived. And my ex-husband, he raised my oldest son, and we have 2 kids together. So I've been a bartender for about 15 years up until probably about a year ago. So I'm a social butterfly to an extent, and I'll remember your drink before I remember your name, and I can tell you a joke or two, and, you know, I do have my flaws. I was an addict for years. I'm clean now, and that's always going to be a lifelong struggle, and I am not perfect, but yeah, in some ways that, like, I'm still in Iraq, so yeah.
So your story, or the person that this story is about, it's one of those stories where you met them earlier in your life and then eventually you reconnected with them. So I guess take us through, you know, the first meeting that you had, which was in 2004 when you were on deployment in Iraq?
Yes. So we met when we were deploying in Iraq. We were basically the second deployment through. We were in the same unit. I had gone a little bit later than some of my unit. And I just remember seeing him here and there. And, you know, we kind of catch eyes and smile at each other. You know, kind of one of those things, like, from a distance. All the ladies, they thought he was so handsome and so very charming. Everybody had a crush on him. And he was attractive. And in passing, we would smile away somehow, some way. We got to chatting one day, and he asked me if I wanted to hang out and watch a movie. And I said, okay, you know, why not? And on that night, we didn't get very far into the movie at all because he just passed out. I, you know, didn't know what was going on. And so I just kind of got up and, you know, like, I'm going to let this guy sleep. After that, that was that. He told me later on that I guess he had been taking some sort of pill. I don't know what they were. After that, I used to go and borrow CDs from him. I guess that gives away my age a little bit, but I used to borrow CDs from him, and we'd chat about nothing in particular. And that's as far as it ever went. And then through the years, there were exchanges of happy birthdays and very, very, very short conversations through social media, Facebook. And that was about the extent of that meeting, that time.
So eventually you end up moving back to your hometown and you buy a home. And this person reaches out to you in July of 2019. He had also moved back to his hometown, which was one state over. And he starts to play the victim and tell you about his evil ex who cheated on him, how that person drained his bank account. And you got to hear about all of his exes being crazy and even his coworkers not really liking him so much. So how did you feel about all of this information, this victim playing, when you heard it?
He's broken and depressed, and we ended up having several conversations. We ended up talking for a long time. The calls just multiplied and became longer. Texts turned into voice calls, and that turned into video calls. And I just wanted to make him smile because he, you know, he was going through a really rough time. And, you know, I just wanted him to forget that he was in that bad place. And so here I am. I'm believing him because I had no reason not to believe him. You know, why would somebody lie about any of that, right? So I'm thinking, oh, this poor guy, you know, all he wants is to be loved. And how could he just have such a streak of bad luck? At the same time, it was almost like these feelings were rising inside me, like, if anybody can love him right, like, it could be me. And this was after, like, several, you know, like, I don't know how many conversations, because, you know, I always had that little crush on him back then. So, you know, I could show him how beautiful it could be. And I did for a while, I guess, so it wasn't good enough anymore. But
so there's all these things going on where he's playing the victim, and this fixer in you is really getting involved that way, and that you want to be this fixer for him and to show him all these things. But what is it that you like about him, and what else is he doing besides discussing his traumas, or what he's saying are his traumas, to kind of reel you in? What else is he doing that is making you feel seen, or, you know, is he giving you the love that you thought you always wanted or always needed? Something along those lines?
If there was building up to that, it made me laugh. It made me laugh so much. I had never laughed like that with anybody. And it was just almost like it was constant. Every day was laughter. And He was easy to talk to about anything, you know, and it wasn't always just about his traumas. It was just, you know, like what we had been doing from the time, the last time we saw each other to that point where we reconnected. And he just had this fascination, like, what have you done? And you've done this, and you've done that. And, you know, how many kids do you have? And, you know, stuff like that. And, but he was just charming. And he, you know, he talked about all the things he wanted to do in life. And it was on par with what I wanted to do. And he wanted to travel. I wanted to travel and a good life for ourselves and for our families and stuff like that. And we could talk about anything, everything under the sun.
Did he seem impressed by you?
I think so. And I think he knew that I was impressed with him as well. So it was kind of like a, like magnet, you know, like a magnet pulling me towards him, like kind of like the sun pulls the tide, I guess. And I like that our outlooks on life kind of fit each other. You know, he was smart. He was funny, down to earth, handsome, charming, loving, supportive. He was a professional, educated, and, you know, he appeared to have drive. He wanted everyone to see him as the good guy, the nice guy.
So you said before that there was a building up to being seen and the love. So can you explain that a bit more?
I had been single for about a year and a half or two, and I had began my education the year before, and I wasn't really looking for a relationship at all. I just didn't really think about it, but he had been paying me so much attention, and, you know, he acted so surprised with how I was as a person, especially as a mother. He always told me that part of his attraction to me was the fact that I was a good mom. So I was basically a teen mom, and no one ever hands you a book and says, here's the direction. You know, I've always wanted to try to strive to be a good mom and dad, I guess, but no one ever told me if I was wrong or I needed to do some work or, you know, so he let me know that I was doing something right in that aspect. And I love my children, and I suppose I needed some sort of validation that I was a good mom. Most other men in my past liked me because I was either pretty or sexy, or because others had interest in me, or, you know, shallow things like that. So for him to be attracted to me for that, you know, which was, you know, below the surface, you know, really meant something to me. And he told me I was a good mom, and, you know, that I was smart, that I was driven, and it made me feel appreciated. And he would say things like, I should have never passed out that night in Iraq. We could have been together this whole time. I could have been a dad by now. This made me, you know, kind of feel special like that. He held on to that from all those years ago. So that, you know, that really played a big part into it. So between November and January, again, we spent a lot of time on the phone, video calls, and it just took up a lot of my time, and I started to see my grades suffering. And then between January and March, he flew to my hometown for a concert. And at that point, he just was there. He didn't leave. And he pushed his flight back about four or five times and was just there. And he worked remotely from my house. He spoiled me. I had never had that much attention from someone consistently, you know, for an extended period of time, I guess. So that's a big thing, you know, because, you know, usually it's like you have that short honeymoon period, which is what I was used to. And this, you know, just carried on, and it carried on. And, you know, we got to know each other more, and it felt like I felt like he knew me and he knew everything about me, even my deepest, darkest secrets. And I trusted him. I really trusted him. You know, I have trouble trusting people. So, but him, it was just so easy. And I felt so comfortable with him. We could talk so freely about anything. And it was like he saw me for me and he loved me for it anyway. And he encouraged me to, you know, keep going in school. And, you know, if it ever came down to it, he would, you know, once my post 9/11 GI Bill expired, that he would help pay for the rest of my education, which I didn't feel like I was going to hold him to it, but it's just the offer being there, you know, like it meant a lot. I felt like he saw me and that I could be myself around him. So again, you know, continued, and we talked for hours all the time. He observed every single detail about me, no matter what it was, like my mannerisms, everything. Like he knew me in and out. And little did I know, he was just probably making mental notes to use things against me and, you know, in the future. But finally, at some point in March, I believe, he flew back home. And not very long after that, I flew out to Houston, and we spent the weekend together and, you know, flying everywhere. And another midweek vacation in March, we actually flew out to Chicago in the middle of the week for dinner at a really high-end restaurant. And we stayed for 3 days and we rented a beautiful high-rise Airbnb. They had windows from the floor to the ceiling, and we got dressed up and we went to have this amazing dinner. Food I've never tasted food like that in my life. Still to this day, that's probably one of the most beautiful trips I've ever taken, because it felt so like genuine. I had no reason to think that he didn't love me. You know, my only thought was, this is it. Like, he's my person. And then, you know, there were times where he got into a rut. I tried to lift him up and reinforce all his wonderful attributes and tell him that he could conquer the world, you know, and it was just this constant dopamine all day, every day. And he basically made himself my addiction.
Well, right here, you know, when it comes to the history of you two, you've known each other at this point in total about 15, 16 years because of when you initially met him in the Army. Then you are now started off, it's probably been about a year at this point where you've had nothing but good. Early on, you have all of these, you know, ex-wife things, ex-girlfriend things, him, you know, not taking the blame for those types of things. But this is now a fully established year. This person has, you know, gone from, you know, you go from, you know, texting to phone calls to video calls to meeting in person to now he's in your space all of the time. And at this point, nothing. There's no reason to believe that this person is a bad person. You have a full year of like, oh, well, maybe a good time will happen. Or I can fix this. You know, this is just a blip. Look at all, there's a track record here. So if things start to show, it's going to be that much harder to leave or get out, because he's done a very good job here as far as, you know, having you feel very loved and getting addicted to him. And it's just this life that you've never had and this future that you want together with this person that, you know, maybe you thought you never were going to get, and now it is here.
Yeah, he's definitely laid that foundation very thick. But yeah, and that brings us to the pandemic. And so the pandemic hit, and he was just there, like there all the time almost. Eventually, when he did go back, we start discussing him moving to Arizona. And next thing you know, like, he's moving. And at some point, something goes wrong with his car on the way. So I had to go and drive, pick him up in El Paso. His car's towed to my house. He just reeks of alcohol. And I'm like, whoa. You know, on the way back, I'm telling him, like, hey, you know, that is not going to fly. Like, that's not going to fly in my house. Like, I have children. There's structure. I don't really drink at home, you know, especially for me being a bartender still at that time. You know, it's like, I don't really do that. And it's not going to fly. Other than that, I mean, he was just there all the time now. And I fell asleep, cuddled up on his chest every single night. He would say, come get in your spot. And, or like, I'd have a bad day or something, and I was stressed out. He'd tap his chest and be like, come get in your spot. And he would scratch my back until I fell asleep. Or, you know, it's like he was a perfect rom-com boyfriend. He, you know, he was hilarious, a little clumsy, and sometimes naive. But, you know, like, there's times I cried with him, and, you know, I laughed with him so much. I laughed so much. You know, we held each other and stuff like that, you know, and I loved them a lot. I loved them so deeply. He accepted who I was, you know, even though, like, I have so many flaws. But we were basically inseparable up until that point. And I guess that leads us into our first fight. You know, like, we would have disagreements about stuff, but those discussions were pretty good. But our very first fight, you know, escalation point for sure. Our first argument, he got highly upset because, he was taking me to, you know, following me to get my car serviced. And I looked in the rearview mirror and I just seen him yelling and screaming at nobody in the car. We had just gone for breakfast and stopped at the bar that I was working at the time and had a couple drinks, and I ran into an old friend of mine. And after that, his, like, whole demeanor changed. And I was like, okay, I don't know what that's about. On the ride back, I asked him, I said, you know, what's going on? I know something's wrong. What's going on? And he got highly upset because I didn't tell him that friend that we had run into, I had slept with a while back, like before I even started talking to him again. But I was still friends with him, and every now and then he, you know, just check up on me and say, hey, how you doing? You know, and that's it. This bothered him, even though I had nothing to do with him. It was before his time. He just went off and he said I lied to him and I, you know, I should have told him. And he couldn't trust me. He threatened to leave me. And I let him know that it was juvenile that he was acting like that. And he just went off and became really cruel. Called me names. I remember him being like in my face, like insulting me. I could feel it on the side of my face. And I was just like, whoa. And it just turned into this huge fight. And that became a pattern of his where he would just like try to bait me into fights, and where like would get so close and in my ear that I would try to kind of push him off because it was all I could do. And that was his cue to like, all right, it's on now, physical fight, there it is. That's the first time he got me in a chokehold. And I almost passed out because I couldn't get any oxygen, you know. And here's this guy, you know, 6'2", about 260. And, you know, I'm over here fighting for literal air. And I just remember, you know, like, I was so close to passing out. I had, you know, my vision was going black. And the only thing I can think to get out of it was just to, like, start swinging, like, up above and behind my head and hope that I made contact. And I did. And he let go. And I tried to push him out of my room and he refused to leave. And I was pissed. Turned into this huge fight. And it was just so devastating and extremely mean. When he got mean that way, his words were like knives. It's like, it was like being stabbed in the heart. It was just so horrible. But he later turned that around on me and convinced me that I abused him. So he would gaslight me into believing his word salad. And he convinced me that I had stubbed him first and I had lost my mind. And the only way to get me to stop hitting him was to get me into a chokehold. And I would argue that, like, no, it didn't happen that way. Are you kidding me? And he kept on assuring me that that's how it happened. That's how it happened. And by the end of rehashing this at different times afterwards, I became more and more confused. And I began to question that reality. And so at that point, I was like, all right, like, you're in my face all the time anyway. He's, you know, like, and after not being in a relationship for a while, it was like, I need some space. So he ended up moving out, and a few days passed, and he just found a way to weasel back in, an excuse to call me or talk to me and ask for my help, and, you know, not admitting what he did, but making me feel as if I was abusive.
So how are you feeling? You know, you said you were confused. So is there any other feelings that you're attaching to everything going on? Like when he left and now you're kind of separated, obviously there's this confusion. Are you feeling angry? Are you feeling anxious? Do you want him back? Are you feeling sad? What are all the things kind of going on here? Because, you know, this is a pretty big shock after a full year of, you know, chocolates and roses kind of a honeymoon period.
I was definitely confused. I think that started, that was like start of like that hazy, that fog. And it just like, it just escalated from there. And I was so hurt. Like, this is the same person, like, that clearly who was in my face was not the same person. And it just started this confusion. And then I started questioning, like, did I do that? Like, am I abusive? Like, you know, he just pounded it into my head. And yeah, that was the start of that. And so, yeah, so he ended up inviting me over for dinner, wanted me to see his room apartment. And so he apologized. And the apologies were kind of strange. Like, didn't apologize for what he did. He was just apologizing for the shitty situation. And you know, he would always surprise me with this small bottle of Louis Trey, very expensive bottle, but they sell these little mini ones. And he's like, oh, I got this for you, like a few $100 down the drain. But he, at that point, he started bringing up, you know, like marriage, having a baby and buying another home and there my desire to be successful and eventually move back to Europe, which is, you know, what I wanted to do. And did a lot of this future faking. And this was kind of, you know, this is where he really started to lay it on, I guess. And he did it when he felt like the attention was drawing away from him. And I can see that now. It was something he used to reel me back in. So I have those glassy eyes, like a high. And I would dismiss everything else because I was so high, all the attention would be directed right back to him. And I can no longer focus on school or work. And he did. He started becoming very jealous whenever we went anywhere. There was always someone who complimented me, like my hair style or my uniqueness or something like that. And he always made it a point to bring that to my attention, like I was looking for that attention. He didn't like that. So after a while, he would start cracking jokes on little things that people complimented me on. You know, he would always sneak in a backhanded comment, especially like days where like I really felt good about myself or something. Whether I was having an awesome hair day or I was killing it at school or work, and I tell him about it, he would reply with something like, that curly Lion King hair, or, you know, but the computer stuff isn't math, but you need to work on your math skills. You know that, right? And then immediately, like when I would notice, like, what? you would immediately follow that up with, I'm joking, I'm kidding. Or, you know, and so after a while, I eventually didn't really have any more feel-good days about myself, you know. And after a while, when he did say these things on a regular basis, I would call him out on it, like, that was kind of rude. And he would immediately just reply with that whole thing, like, I'm kidding, I'm joking. But it took a toll on me, and it began to break me down. And I became very self-conscious. Whenever I was, like I said, I was excelling at work or in my classes, getting recognition, he would just take those little jabs at me, and just, he would come at me with these little backhanded comments, sarcastically call me superstar, or hint that I wouldn't be able to handle the higher forces. And so at one point, I ended up in this commercial for community college right before I graduated and got my first degree. And I initially thought it was going to be an interview, like a pen and paper. That's what I was like led to believe. But it turned out to be this full-blown, like, commercial with makeup lady doing my makeup, standing in front of me. And, you know, like, we had to do 3 takes, 5 takes, and stuff like that. And it turned out it was, like, one of the commercials that Hulu used. And it was seen, like, all the way to the East Coast. And I was blown away. I was like, oh, my God. But he hated it. He would roll his eyes. He just didn't like that the attention wasn't on him. If I was kicking ass and taking names and just excelling at everything, he would conveniently have a major breakdown at times. He'd be in bed for like a week. He would miss work. I fell further behind in school. He wouldn't let me do homework in peace. I was always working just to keep him pacified. So he, in that aspect, he was the demand man. Everything had to be about him. And yeah, he would suddenly, conveniently have these breakdowns. So he had an education, he thought he was better. He thought even better. And anytime anybody tried to express an opinion, somehow, some way, they were wrong. And did they have that, the education that he did? And if they didn't, then they were wrong and he was right. And he used that during fights getting started. He started to be more accusatory. He started accusing me, like, I mean, I'm talking out of left field. He would just talk about how I was cheating on him because we didn't hang out the night before or something. He accused me of hacking into his phone and his account. It never even crossed my mind to do. And he did it. He started doing it so much that it started to make me question what and where, like, all that came from. And, you know, he was always really smug about it. Like, he's like, you think I don't know what you do? Like, what do? Like, I work full time. So it's like, I don't have time to, I barely have time to sleep, you know?
So at this point of the relationship, you had that full year of sunshines and rainbows. And, you know, first year you start off with a physical abuse situation. And then, you know, you have jealousy that occurs. You're getting these backhanded compliments at this time as well. There is some financial abuse kind of going on here because, you know, he's having these breakdowns. So those breakdowns are causing you to miss work because you have to take care of him in a lot of ways. And, you know, he's nitpicking at you. You have like a lot of these put downs going on. So, and then he's making up these lies and he's accusing you of things. So the person that you met and the person you fell in love with is now not the same person anymore. And you are, you know, watching these behaviors. You're observing everything. And because of the fact of the love bombing doing a really good job, you know, you're knee deep in it. So how are you feeling at this point what are you thinking? Are you thinking like, who is this person? I don't know this person anymore. Like, or are you thinking things could change?
Oh yeah. All of that was going on. Like at this point, I'm becoming more and more confused. I'm not feeling on top of the world like I was before. I'm beginning to doubt myself. I'm beginning to question things. I'm beginning to just, I'm very not secure in my own skin anymore. And what it was is like, I wanted to try to get that person back. That's what it was. Like, I want to get that person back. I know he can be this way, but I want to try to get that back. And you hang on to that and you think, we can make this better. We can work on it. You know, not everything's going to be rainbows and sunshine all the time. There's going to be these hard spots where I've got to stick with them. And then coming from a Hispanic background, you know, you're taught to stick by your partner through thick and thin, through hell and high water, you know, and make it through those rough times. So, you know, that's what I was brought up to believe, and that's what I was going to do. And I loved this person. I was already invested, and I wanted to get that person back.
So the beginning of the end of your relationship starts to take hold with a series of fights that turn into breakups. So walk us through this.
I think it was probably after just like a few days after Valentine's Day in 2022, first time we split, we got into this huge argument because I had started calling him out on his behavior, and we had had a discussion a few weeks prior, and I had tried to sit him down and say, hey, look, what you're doing here, like, this is not right. This is breaking me down. This is not right. You need to know what you're doing, because this isn't right. And it's hurting me. It's abusive. You're telling me that I'm abusive, but yet you're doing all of this. And it was so hard to get him to realize, so hard to get him to understand that, because he didn't think he did anything wrong. It didn't apply to him. And I remember I got into that point where, like, kind of broke down a little bit, put on the waterworks, and I'll do better. I'll start going for treatment at the VA. I will, you know, I'll read these self-help books or whatever. And he did. For a couple of weeks.
So the cycle ends there, only for it to actually just restart. And eventually you find yourself in an argument where he accuses you of cheating and things escalate from there. So walk us through this.
I remember him sitting there in his apartment and he got so mad. His face was like so distorted, and he turned around and he looked at me and he yelled at me. He said specifically, verbatim, like, this is, I will remember it clear as day. He said, what you think and feel is not reality. And it just blew me away, and like tearing this thing down my face. And I was just like, it was a shock to hear somebody say that, to invalidate so much. Like, I'm getting kind of emotional about it right now, because I don't know if I've ever really dealt with it, but to have somebody invalidate you that much, you know, the hurt that you're going through and the mess that your head is becoming, it's really hurtful. So at that point, this was the second time he choked me out. And again, he had tried to bait me into a fight and, you know, try to push him away because he's in my face, you know, that's, like I said before, that's his cue, like it's on. So this was the second time he took me out. I was face down on his bed, looking out the huge window. And I remember my lip being busted. And for whatever reason, I don't know why, but there was this empty glass on his bed. And I remember, again, blackness. My vision started to go black. And I'm like, I'm not going to let him choke me out till I passed out, because I don't know what he's going to do to me. Like, I don't know this person anymore, so I don't know what he's going to do to me. And so I grabbed the glass, you know, he caught my hand, grabbed the glass out of my right hand and swung it downward and threw it on the floor. And it was a bare floor and it shattered. Something, I don't know what happened, but it made him stop. And he got off of me, and I just kind of laid there for a minute. I was crying, and I started walking toward the door behind me. And he just wanted to keep going. And I'm like, what the hell? And I remember standing there, and he looked at me, and he swung. And I kind of seen it coming, so I backed up couple of inches. He still hit me in the throat. He punched me in the throat. And I looked at him. I was like, are you trying to fucking kill me? And without hesitation, he said, I will. And I remember just walking out of his apartment. And so I didn't talk to him for like 6 weeks. And I remember during those 6 weeks, my best friend, she was adamant about trying to push me to move on. So he convinced me to let her open up these, you know, like 2 or 3 dating profiles for me. And I was like, whatever, whatever. So she set them up, gave me the password, did everything. And I waited about a month to log into one of them. I took one look at one of the messages and I was like, I can't do this. I can't, you know, I can't do this. I felt like I was cheating on him. And it was just, I was so hurt by it during these 6 weeks. Anything and everything made me think of him, and it was bad. He called me through, I think it was Google Meet, on one of my emails, and he had begged and cried and apologized, and he said he would seek help. And so to me, I took him back, you know, and my head at this point was still reeling. You know, I couldn't do anything right. You know, I was, you know, I had had that in my head that I was the fuck up, you know, and if I felt good, he would still continue to have these breakdowns, and I couldn't get my footing in a solid spot. And I made excuses for him, and I don't know why. But at this point I had mentioned the abuse to my mother and my kids. And immediately they cut him off. So at that point, I didn't let him come to my house anymore. I would end up going to his apartment quite a bit. Sometimes I would stay the night. After I took him back, I began to really question everything, because at that point, during those 6 weeks that we were split up, I don't know what prompted me to do it, but I began to read and research about narcissists. And it was just amazing, because everything really began to hit home, because I had experienced everything. If there was a checklist, I checked every single box a couple times over. So coming back into the relationship, the veil was beginning to lift.
So eventually one day you two are at his apartment, and you had been suspecting for a while that he was cheating. So on this occasion, you ask to see his phone. So walk us through this.
I said, can I see your phone? He told me I could, whenever I wanted, I could take a look at your phone if I thought I needed to. He pauses, scratches his head, gets his phone off the charger and drops it on the counter in front of me. And he says, go ahead. I said, well, you have to unlock it, silly. So he unlocks his phone. And at this point, he's like kind of sweating. So I sit there at the counter, you know, in his little kitchen area. And I'm like, okay. So I begin to open up all these apps on his phone and anything I can think of. And he finished up putting the groceries away, and he went over and he started playing his stupid video game. And in about 15 to 20 minutes, I found several Reddit accounts that I had no clue about. And a lot of, and most of those accounts were all tied to the Gone Wild online sex communities. He had joined local Arizona Gone Wild sex communities. Several conversations with women seeking sex, some of which he calls by the same name he called me. Several email accounts that I never knew about. I found some in other men's names. I found conversations with many women looking for sex, some bashing me. For him, same thing, for him. Pictures of naked women. There was a conversation with a woman that I had never heard of that he openly flirted with. He portrayed me to be a horrible monster. Her telling him that he needs to leave me already, that he needs to duck my sorry ass, and telling her about, you know, the size of his dick and scrolling and scrolling and scrolling, just finding so much crap. So all this was happening so fast, and it was just, all of a sudden it was like coming together, and like the Tesseract, you know, or like a Rubik's Cube, or, like a puzzle coming together, and I could feel his evil stare burning, like just burning through my head every few minutes. And I'm just like, oh yeah, this is it. This is it. Like I could feel the heat rising inside of me, like to the point where like your ears are hot. And the smartest thing, I didn't react. I found all those skeletons, and I remember thinking, you need to get out. You need to get the fuck out. You need to go. Don't do some stupid shit. You need to get out now. Never look back. Someone will probably end up dead, and who knows, it might be you. So I just kind of kept my poker face, and I was like, run, run. So I closed out every single app that I had open. I closed out every single window. And so I got dressed. I put my shoes on. I put my hat on. I grabbed my backpack. I had all my stuff. I walked out the front door without one word. And without a tear, I turned to go down the hall to the elevator. And I could see him out of the corner of my eye. And he was sitting in that stupid gaming chair, chin resting on his fingers. He was pissed all to hell. So there I go, down 7 floors and out the automatic back doors. And as soon as I walked out those sliding doors, I felt this, almost like a fresh breeze blow against me as I walked out into the sunlight. And it felt like the first sunlight that I could clearly remember experiencing in the last year, maybe two. I got in my SUV and I drove home in complete calm and silence. And I got home. I put the speaker that I had at his house and my poster box that I was carrying. I set those down on the kitchen island, my backpack off, and my two youngest kids, my teenagers, they came down the stairs and they greeted me. They're like, hey, mom, how was the work? How was work? How was, oh, what's in this box? Oh, I remember that speaker. And I just told them, I'm good, kids, you know, better than I've been for a while. And, you know, I carried on with my day. And conveniently, he did call all weekend, not until Monday night. I didn't answer it. And then 2 to 3 weeks after I left him, that fog, and I know that's the only way I can describe it, is like that fog began to lift. You know, and I thought that was going to be the end of it. I really didn't. I thought, what a perfect way to leave him, like, not say a word. So about a week after I left him, a week and a half, I get a phone call. I was in the middle of a virtual math class at home in my home office. And I get numerous calls from my cousin's wife. And I was like, oh, something must be wrong. So I answered. I was like, hey, you know, is everything okay? I was like, yeah, are you okay? Fine, I'm in the middle of a math class. Are you guys okay? Are you and the girls okay? Like, yeah. I was like, well, I'm in the middle of a math class, and if I don't pay attention, I'm going to suffer. And she was like, okay, well, call me back. So I called her back when the class was done. And she said that my now ex had messaged her husband, my cousin, turns out he messaged a few of my good friends through Facebook Messenger, sending them pictures of his apartment. Totally trapped. Totally trapped. And he had told them that I had gotten in a fight with him, that I broke his nose, and that I trashed his apartment. I had hacked into all of his devices. So my cousin's wife is telling me this, and I'm like, dude, no, I haven't seen him for a week. She's like, what's going on? I said, well, kind of embarrassed to say anything, but I left him over a week ago, and I haven't seen or talked to him since. So that following morning, he was trying to comment all over my Facebook about who knows what. I just would immediately delete him. I started blocking him on everything. He sent me shitty emails, calling me trash, talking about how he needed to get an STD test because I had cheated on him. And he accused me of hacking into his devices, which none of that ever happened. And it just like escalated from there. And after that, he stalked me. He cyber stalked me. He physically stalked me for the next 10 months, but I've had to file for identity theft twice. I've had to lock my credit, lock my kid's credit. I have spotted him around my house. I had to take 2 semesters off of school. I've had to change my phone number twice. I've replaced my phone 3 times, repaired several laptops, kids' laptops, replaced my kids' phones, replaced 2 internet routers, and now I carry a gun everywhere I go. I'm sorry, I just told myself that. I would try not to get so emotional. It was really draining, but the only thing that I could think was, he wants a reaction out of this. He wants a reaction. He wants control. He wants me to do something. It's taken a lot of discipline, but I haven't reacted. And I just kind of laugh it off like, wow, you know, you really want to know my life that much. You know, and the sad thing about it is that the laws have not caught up with the technology. So sometimes, yeah, I felt like I was stuck in a rocket, between a rock and a hard place.
And how's your healing process been?
I'm a lot better now. I've always been told that I was good at writing. So part of the healing is writing, and I started blogging. You have to get it out. You have to get it out, whether it's writing or, you know, a podcast or talking to your friends and family or going to therapy. You have to go to therapy. But if you don't get it out, even if it's just in your own private journal, it'll fester. It'll fester inside you. And, you know, it helps to identify those feelings and to put a name to those emotions. It kind of empowers you. And I've experienced this. I know I'm not the only one, you know, and I'm in the very start of brainstorming like a community outreach. I decided to start looking into this project through my community college that I graduated from. It's in the formulating stages, but I intend for it to educate and tie together tech, you know, being like cybersecurity and domestic violence survivors and shelters and law enforcement, and educating them on these situations because it keeps the cycle of abuse going. And a lot of ways to do that, the way to do that is through tech. And, you know, I have the knowledge of it, but for somebody who doesn't, they might not know how to escape that. And the laws haven't caught up with today's tech, and it needs to. And, you know, I feel that I can heal more by helping others and bringing awareness and, you know, a lot of self-care. A lot of self-care, tons of it.
And if you had any words of wisdom for everyone listening, what would it be?
I would say, trust your gut. And the minute it starts getting bad like that, you have to walk away. And if you have to walk away without ever saying a word again, then walk away, you know, and learn to love yourself, because you deserve to be loved.
Well, Annapurna, I just really want to thank you today for being here, sharing your story. Sharing your story is not an easy thing to do. And just, you know, a really big hug for me and everyone who was listening to your story today. I know you're going to help a lot of people by sharing your story. So a really big thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Well, thank you for having me. Thank you. It really means a lot.
Well, thank you once again, Annapurna, for being a guest on our show. And if you want to be a guest like Annapurna was today, please do go to our website at narcissistapocalypse.com. Top of the page, there's a button that says guest form. When you click on that button, it takes you to our guest form page. There you can read all of our instructions and either send us an email at narcissistapocalypse@gmail.com or fill out our guest form and press the submit button. And please do send it in the format that we ask for. Also, at our website, we have our very own support group. So if you need support at our website, when you click on that support group button at narcissistapocalypse.com, it takes you to our very own safe social network. Inside, you will find that we have Zoom meetings every Wednesday night, every Thursday afternoon, and every Saturday night. We have forum boards for you to post on to get the validation that you need, and also to give other survivors just like you validation as well, advice, hugs, everything under the sun. It's a great group of people in our support group, so join our group today. And if you need even more support, please do visit our friends at domesticshelters.org. At domesticshelters.org, they have articles and resources to help you make sense of what you've been going through. They have every phone number, email address, and website address for shelters and agencies, no matter how big or small the town you are in. Domesticshelters.org has it there. So please do visit them today. They are great people at domesticshelters.org. And that is it for today's episode. So for myself and Annapurna, we hope you have a good night.